One of Gordon Lightfoot's earliest hit songs. If we were to get on our high horse, we would say, in the pre-dawn precipitation, in the, in this case, early morning rain, and Tim O'Brien does a great version of this. And here he is at the Saturday Light Brigade. Nice. That's Tim O'Brien at the Saturday Light Brigade. Are you a nurse? That charge is for you. Angie in Mars points out that it's Nurses Day and Nurses Week is coming up. Thank you, Angie. And thanks to you for sharing all of these horse idioms. Ty says, when two options are the same, and the choice doesn't really matter. It can be called a horse apiece. That's a new one that I didn't hear before. Rich wanted to know, if I have a sore throat and say I'm hoarse, does that count? It can if we let it. Thank you. There are more that we haven't mentioned in addition to these, but that's all the time we have for this puzzle. Broadcasting live from historic Allegheny Square, along with Ricky Berger and Chad Green, and I see Ty Trotsky somewhere scooting about. This is Larry Berger, and this is the show that gets your weekend off to a good start, the Saturday Light Brigade. Saturday mornings at WRCT Pittsburgh, WIUP FM Indiana, WMCO New Concord KRDP, Apache Junction, Goldfield Ghost Town, Phoenix, WSAJ FM Grove City, WCUC FM Clarion, WNJR Washington, and internet radio stations and streaming services everywhere, including slbradio.org/radio. Coming up, we are going to be heading outside. Our studio doors are now open. It's open to house time today at SLB, and you can join us anytime live in studio between now and 1 o'clock.
I just telephone upstairs when I'm troubled. Never need to drop a nickel in at all.
Saturday Light Brigade, and we are just moments away now, just a few moments from welcoming our ensemble. You guys can hear me out there, I hope, and we'll welcome our ensemble in just a few moments from North Hills Middle School. Another request this morning, nice to have so many, the Gina Furtado Project. I just telephoned upstairs, the name of the song.
The Northside Chronicle joins you in supporting SLB Radio. The Northside Chronicle is a free community newspaper that provides hyperlocal coverage of the people, places, and events in Pittsburgh's historic Northside neighborhoods. The May issue, featuring the Health and Wellness Guide, is available now in print and online at thenorthsidechronicle.com.
Well, Remake Learning Days is upon us. And our studio doors are open. If you would like to tour our Youth Media Center, take a look at it. See what our studio looks like. See what it looks like behind the scenes of a radio program. You can do that. It's really a great pleasure to be able to do this today. And it's the studio that you helped to build through your support. And we're going to be, in just a moment, giving you a chance to hear one of the reasons we built this Youth Media Center. Allison Craig is here from the North Hill School District, and we have eight different students. We might even have more than eight. Two, four, six. No, we have eight, exactly eight students. I'll count them once I'm out there. That probably is not as important as the fact that this group, all middle schoolers, will be playing four selections coming up. I'm really looking forward to getting outside of our main studio here out into the Youth Media Center, which is where they are. Let me introduce you right now to our students from North Hills Middle School. Sounds. And Allison, don't go too far. We're going to say hello to Ms. Craig. Tell us what we just heard.
So we just heard Blue Rhythmico. This is a piece that some of our students have played at an honors festival called Strings North. And it's fun. One of the best things about this festival is each teacher from one of the Northern Pittsburgh school districts gets to conduct it. And this was one of the pieces that I chose.
So you got to hear all these folks. What made you choose this piece? Is there something about it that really resonated with you as a piece for youth to play?
I just love the syncopation, and I love the fact that we're all kind of moving together. Like, orchestra is a very, I feel like it's a very physical kind of thing, and just the fact that we move our bows at the same speed, at the same rhythms. It's pretty cool.
Excellent. We're going to meet some of you now. Can I start at this end? Yes, you're first. Can you tell me your name? Yes, yay, I'm first. Your name, how old you are, and anything you want to tell us about yourself?
My name is Grace. I'm 14 years old, and I play the violin.
Well, it's nice to meet you. How long have you played?
5-6 years, I think.
And how was it to learn? I'm curious. I've never even tried to play a violin or fiddle, but was it hard for you to get to know it?
No, you just have to practice.
That makes sense. Probably lots of it. Let's meet the person that's on your left. Hello.
Hi, I'm Mel. I'm 13 years old, and I play the violin.
And out of curiosity, how long has it been for you, and what was it like to learn? Do you have advice to somebody who might be trying to play that hasn't before?
I've been playing since fourth grade, and my only advice is sign up if you really want to sign up, but don't sign up if you don't want to waste your time.
Makes sense. If you're going to do it, mean it, basically.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably true for a lot of things. What else do you like to do?
I play with my dog, and I mentioned him in the last time I was here, Brownie. He's like a year old now.
I remember Brownie. Did he hear his name on the radio last time?
I think so.
I hope so. We count on that. Any other shout-outs for today?
Just a shout-out to my family and Miss Craig and Mr. V.
Excellent. Did you have any shout-outs that you wanted to pass along?
What she said.
What she said, including Brownie, including everybody. Let's meet you. Go ahead and tell us about yourself.
My name's Windsor. I'm 14, and I play the viola.
And what do you like to do in addition to music?
I love to read. That's one of other things I like to do in my free time.
Is there a book you're reading now or one you would recommend that maybe folks don't know much about?
I loved Where the Crawdads Sing. That was one of my favorite books.
That's a great book. Do you remember the author?
Delia Owens, I think, or something.
I think. I don't mean to put you on the spot, but that was a great book. Any shout-outs or hellos?
Mr. V and Miss Craig and my family. Mostly, they've been really supportive with concerts and performances that I have.
So. Well, that's great. We'll talk to one more student, then we'll get the other half after the next selection you hear. What's your name?
My name's Helen.
And you are playing what?
I play the viola.
Any shout-outs at all for you?
I guess all my teachers and my family.
Wonderful. Thank you for being here. I'm going to scoot over to Ms. Craig now. And I think the next song, I heard you warming up. I think this is one everybody should likely recognize. Am I right?
Yes, definitely.
So it's a song that featured strings, one of the among the first to have strings in it from this particular group, I think. And you'll recognize it here again. Did we name this ensemble?
Oh, so we've been discussing this. At one point, I think around December, we were just deciding a name, and somebody in this group decided to come up with Yinzer Strings. So I think we are the Yinzer Strings.
I like it, Yinzer Strings. So here they are with a song that will probably be recognizable once you hear it. Eleanor Rigby, you figured that out, I hope, from the Yinzer Strings. I like it. Let's meet the other members that you haven't heard from yet. Hello.
Hi, I'm Zoe.
And how long have you, you're playing violin as well? How long have you played?
Also since fourth grade.
And what else do you like to do?
I play lacrosse. I actually just had my 20th goal of the season last night, so it's exciting.
Congratulations. What's a typical high? That sounds like a lot for a season.
I don't really know. It varies on age and skill level, I guess.
That's quite a lot. How long have you played lacrosse?
Since third grade.
I know it gets bigger and bigger, it seems. Well, congratulations. Any shout-outs at all?
To my family. My mom's over there. My brothers are probably listening at home.
I hope so. What are their names?
John and Eric. They both also play in orchestra.
Excellent. Well, John and Eric, we hope to see you and hope you're listening. What's your name?
I'm Luke, and I play the violin. Awesome.
And do you have any shout-outs?
Just my family and my teachers, Miss Craig, Mr. V.
Excellent. What else do you like to do?
I also play the guitar outside of school. And, yeah.
And what do you like to play on guitar? Do you have a style that you prefer playing?
Right now I have an acoustic. I want to get an electric for my birthday, I'm hoping.
When's your birthday?
In June 30th.
Hint, hint. Just about a month or two away. What are the kinds of things that you play on acoustic?
It's more strumming chords, like country stuff, kind of.
Yeah, I get it. Like learning how to play tabs and chords and getting started. Do you like country or bluegrass?
Not really, but I don't really have a choice.
Well, we'll see what happens come June 30th, I guess. It's nice to meet you. Now we have a bass. Hello.
Hi. I'm Zoe. I play the bass. Yeah.
We have two Zoes again today, right? And can you tell us, I think we talked the last time you were here. Maybe not. I think we did. I'm curious how you came to choose the instrument.
I don't know. I just wanted to be different. Not a lot of people were picking it. It was also really short, so it didn't really make sense, but I did anyways.
You seem to fit just fine, and I'm really glad you're able to do this and to play. Do you have any shout-outs to anybody who might be listening?
My family, because they drive me everywhere to these extra opportunities for orchestra, and Mr. V and Mrs. Craig.
Is your family here somewhere? Where are they? There they are. They're filming you, and they drove you here. Do you think they're going to take you back?
Hopefully.
It's nice to meet you. And I'm going to come over to our cello. I think I can make it. I did, barely. I'll let you do all the work here. You know what we're doing at this point.
My name is Vasudeva, and I've been playing cello for a little over a year now.
And what got you interested in it?
So, mostly my father. Since I was just a little young child, he has been pretty much immersing me my whole life in cello music.
So you listened to the cello a lot, but you didn't start playing until, how old are you again?
I'm 13.
So you started playing when you were about 12 or so. That had to be really interesting. What was it like to begin to make music with the cello after hearing it for so long?
It was actually really cool. One of the songs that he has showed me for like years is pretty much just how I learned it, listening to it over and over again and then trying to play it. And that's pretty much how I learned.
Well, that's terrific. Any shout-outs or anything else you'd like to add?
My mother and father, of course, and Miss Allison Craig and Mr. V.
Excellent. Well, it's nice to meet all of you today. And I'm going to go back to Miss Allison Craig because we're just at the halfway point in terms of numbers. Is there anything you'd like to say about this group? I think it's great that they're doing this as an extra activity outside of school, but they all seem to really love playing too.
They do. We were actually rehearsing yesterday, And one of them mentioned, they said, I could play like for the whole entire day. And I was like, you can't stay in the orchestra room all day, but it was nice. It's nice to have such a responsible group, and they formed this group on their own. I'm not sure if you know this, but I don't teach eighth grade, and this is all eighth graders, and they, you know, stepped it up and decided they wanted to perform outside of North Hills a lot more. So we've been looking for different venues to perform at.
Well, that's great. If you might like to have this group perform, you can drop us a note and we'll make sure we pass it along to Alice and Craig. We have listeners all over the country, so you never know. We might have to take up a collection and send you guys off to another city. And it's nice that you're volunteering your time to do this today, too. What's next?
Next is actually a piece that they've been working on in class called Fantasia on an Original Theme. This piece, actually, they're going to be doing by themselves. I don't have to conduct or anything. They're totally independent.
Excellent. Well, here again, Yenzer Strings. I'm trying to sell it. It's sounding better and better. And this is Fantasia on an Original Theme. Thank you. That was absolutely beautiful, wasn't it? There's enough people to applaud here. It's always a little awkward. You don't know if you're supposed to applaud during a radio broadcast or not. Almost as awkward as somebody coming up to you with a microphone just as you're about to drink some hot chocolate, as you're working on Post-it. Yes, that would be you. What's your name?
Calvin.
Can you say it a little louder? Did I hear you say Calvin? Yes? Is it? The not? I see it written right there, Calvin. Are you with Calvin?
Mrs. Craig's son.
Oh, who, are you Mrs. Craig's son? Well, you're very important to be here. How old are you?
4.
It's nice to meet you. You must be really proud of your mom, are you? Yes?
He plays the violin, too.
You play the violin?
Yeah.
Do you like to play?
Yep.
Well, excellent. Do you know how to spell Calvin?
C-A-L-V-I-N.
Very good. Well, it's nice to meet you, Calvin. That will be played at your wedding someday. And enjoy your cocoa. And I'm going to go back to your mom. And this will be our last chance to talk for this morning. Is there anything else you'd like to say?
Nothing other than the fact that I'm so proud of this group. I've known them since they were in fourth grade, and it's great every year. They get better and better, and like next year when they're in high school, we'll go on our high school tour, we'll perform even more pieces, and just looking forward to all that they're going to accomplish.
You sound really great, too, and that last song especially showed you off as musicians, I think. Your improvisation, and you could just tell you were really feeling everything you were playing in that song. So thank you for sharing that with us. Now, how are we going to finish up?
So we're actually going to finish off with a piece that we performed last year on our orchestra tour, but they loved it so much that they had to bring it back. And I do love this piece because it has all four pieces have like a different genre. This one is called Legends of Glory.
And before you played, did anybody want to say something that they didn't get a chance to say? Just checking. Calvin, did you get all your everything you wanted to say said? Yeah? Okay. Calvin said yes. So I'm going to turn it back to Calvin's mom and Yinzer Springs. Springs or Strings? Yinzer Strings. What a beautiful job. Let's hear it again for them. Yinzer Strings. Thank you, Yinzer Strings. And we can't wait to hear them more. You're listening to the show that gets your weekend off to a good start, the Saturday Light Brigade, Saturday mornings here at SLB. We're open for Remake Learning Days today. Come on by. We'd love to see you. Here's something a little newer from Gordon Lightfoot. It's from his last studio album.
Do you walk? Do you talk? Do you do funny things? Do you run? Do you hide? Are you gonna survive? Do you back? Do you hide? Do you like camping out? Do you slip? Do you slide? Do you keep yourself alive? There is no situation which cannot be overcome. There is no fear of loneliness can get me on the run. Do you walk? Do you talk? Do you live on the block? Do you sing? Do you play? Do you take it away? Do you act like a sheep? Do you talk in your sleep? Do you dance on a dock? Do you sit upon a rock? There is no situation which cannot be at rest. There is no kind of common sense which cannot be expressed. Are you weak? Are you strong? Did you ever belong? Are you mean? Are you lean? Have you ever been wrong? Are you rough? Are you tough? Or have you had enough? Do you stop for a look? Do you ever read a book? There is no situation which cannot be overcome. There is no fear of loneliness can get me on the run. Do you walk? Do you talk? Do you ever get mad? Are you first? Are you last? Do you live in the past? Are you tall? Are you small? Do you stick to the wall? Are you cold? Are you hot? Give it everything you've got. There is no situation which cannot be addressed. There is no kind of common sense which cannot be
called Do You Walk, Do You Talk, the song. And Gordon Lightfoot's album that's from, the late Gordon Lightfoot, that album is called Solo. And it holds up nicely, meaning I think in terms of it's representing his just continued progression as an artist and songwriter and player. I like that album a lot. I was listening to it a lot this week. If you didn't know, Gordon Lightfoot passed away at the age of 84 on Monday in Toronto. If our kids from North Hills are still listening, Yinzer Strings, we had a message indicating that Vaughn at home was listening. Gail wrote from Stanton Heights. Vaughn was singing along to Eleanor Rigby. So you were some music to sing to this morning. In just a moment, we're going to go from music to writing. And what should be an interesting piece, there has been a lot of attention lately, partly due to efforts of George Takei to help understand how people who are of Japanese background, some of the difficulties that they had during the period following Pearl Harbor and far beyond that. And while Elaine Gombos has not specifically, her subject matter is not specifically about that per se, she has a paper that talks about Japanese war brides and their influence on multiculturalism in the United States. And we're going to talk about that with Elaine shortly. And full disclosure, we know Elaine as a Pittsburgh Youth Media Corps member, so I can tell you with certainty that you're going to enjoy hearing her observations on this topic.
A-Plus Schools joins you in supporting SLB Radio. The mission of A-Plus Schools is to make sure that all children in Pittsburgh get the high-quality education they deserve. A-Plus Schools' 2022 report to the community provides a thorough and objective look at Pittsburgh's public and charter schools, offering families, community organizations, policymakers, and concerned citizens with critical data about student achievement, student growth, school climate, teaching, and more. A copy of this report and more information about A-Plus Schools is available at ourschoolspittsburgh.org.
Later today, Brad Yoder will be joining us in our next hour, in fact. I see Brad. He'll be joining us in our next hour. Remake Learning Days is upon us, and we are open. You can come by and visit our studios anytime between now and 1 o'clock here today on May 6th. Now, I want to bring Elaine into the picture here so she can tell us more. This is Elaine Gombos, who is about to graduate from Shadyside Academy. And I'm curious about this paper. I started to mention George Takei. There's a lot more to this. You were probably thinking about this topic before. I don't know if you've seen the work he's been doing as of late to try to call attention to a lot of discrimination faced by people from Japan. There really is not enough awareness of that, and how U.S. citizens of Japanese descent really, frankly, were punished after Pearl Harbor due to a lot of xenophobia and fear. But your topic is interesting, the paper you wrote, because it kind of talks a little bit about how marriages, Japanese war brides in particular, brought about multiculturalism. Tell me a little bit about what you did and also why you chose to do it.
Yeah, I loved this topic. Like, when I found out about this topic, I was like, oh, I know this is what I want to write my U.S. history paper about. Because we basically had the freedom to choose from any time period, any topic in U.S. history. So it was very hard to narrow it down. But what I love most about this topic is its intersectionality and how much it involves. Because we're talking about immigration, because these are Japanese citizens, women growing up in Japan, who are marrying U.S. GI during the U.S. occupation of Japan after World War II. So there's immigration involved, there's gender involved. We're talking about marriages and households and, you know, that love that is between, that surpasses these boundaries and location and distance. We're also talking about race, because we have these interracial marriages, which at the time with eugenism, like, it still wasn't that popular or accepted. And this was something that really broke the barrier, but is still so, like, not talked about enough, because at the time when the Japanese war brides immigrated to the U.S., the ones who could, surpass those immigration restrictions, which were always, there was a lot of restrictions in place at that time based on your race and where you were coming from in immigrating to the U.S. Most of them were entering, you know, rural places where there was not much diversity to begin with. So assimilation was expected. And so there wasn't a lot of loud voices shouting for it, like advocacy or change. But there are people, especially children, mixed race children like me, of these war by marriages who are documenting and telling the stories of their parents. So that was something that really pulled me to the topic.
It's interesting. It this is something I've never really thought much about. We hear about so-called war brides, that term, folks who, men predominantly serving as soldiers during this time, meeting women and coming back. Would most be married in Japan, or would they come back and be married here in the United States? How did that? And I know there's probably no typical case, but I'm just trying to get my arms around the topic.
It was, it's from a case by case basis. It was different, but the thing about that time period was that everything was so ambiguous. Like in terms of immigration, who they were letting in really depended on, you know, who was in charge at the time, like who you're meeting. There was no standardization because the laws were not incorporating all these identities. So you had these ambiguities in this gray area where people were like, well, can we let them in? Can we not? So in terms of when the U.S. soldiers were in Japan, there were definitely people in charge who were trying to stop that. Like the Supreme Commander of Allied Forces, they were trying to stop that from happening because there were still U.S. states that banned interracial marriage. This was before Loving v. Virginia, that overturned.
That's what I was wondering.
Yeah.
And I guess here you talked about intersectionality. I guess you've got an issue of race and country of origin. I wasn't really thinking race as much, but that would be the case, and maybe even varying by state.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting to think of. And do you think predominantly the feeling was negative at that time? That would be hard to assess, but there certainly wasn't the kind of general understanding there might be now.
Yeah, for sure. I think of Japanese war brides as really the last final spark to the fire. I feel like there was a lot of change already happening, and then Japanese war brides and World War II in general really was really a change maker in being able to spark all this change. So there are stories, because in my paper I kind of talked about the big picture, right, of, you know, the statistics I tried to find about the number of war brides and the laws that were in place, but also specific stories that were documented by mixed race children. So there's this one story about how this couple, they were moving, the American GI was from Massachusetts, and he basically requested, I think it was actually before John F. Kennedy became president, but he was in charge at that time. And so he requested for a private bill to be passed for his wife to come and immigrate to the U.S. And that's how they came to the U.S. because U.S. immigration laws at that time were still not accommodating that. And Massachusetts was a state that it was legal to interracially marry. But in terms of for Americans who are not from those states, where it was legal to marry another person from another race, the situation was very, it was very difficult for these people who were in love. There's a socio-emotional part of it as well as this socio-economic part. So it was a really interesting topic to explore, and definitely I enjoyed looking at the big picture, trying to find accurate statistics, which, you know, at that time, because immigration laws were so ambiguous and people were not documenting, race-based categorization was still like, they weren't documenting the races properly and the identities of immigrants properly. So it was very difficult to estimate how many Japanese war brides actually came to the U.S., how many interracial marriages were there in the, during the U.S. occupation of Japan. So it was evident that, you know, our history is really much, and our version of history is really much tied to the perspectives of the people at that time and what they were documenting.
So it's likely, well, all history has bias, but in this case, the history really is more of the people surrounding the brides, their husbands, and their families, as opposed to they themselves, it sounds like. Did you have a chance to read anything written by war brides or their families, or actually speak to any to better understand things? I don't know if there's much source material out there.
I didn't get to speak in person, but like through email, I contacted an expert who was documenting the stories, and she is the child of a war bride marriage, a Japanese war bride marriage.
Yeah, I guess a lot of them would. They're probably getting older and not available mm-hmm. to speak with firsthand. What did she share with you?
She had done a lot of work prior to this about like different war bride marriages, so I used a lot of sources written by her. And she kind of shared her opinion about the fine line between assimilation and multiculturalism, because you want to assimilate enough to a point where you are able to enact change, where you're able to earn the trust of other people and introduce multiculturalism. And in a way, this was what Japanese war brides did. Like, they came to a new country, was kind of like thrown into it. Like, imagine being like the only person of color in a rural community. And they tried their best to learn English, assimilate, and then retain pieces of their culture, such as food, etc. And like, there are stories of war brides who kind of initiated these festivals, celebrating Japanese culture in certain communities. So it's very much a story of just resilience and people coming here and doing what they can do best and just surviving.
Yeah, it's fascinating to think about it. Are we a melting pot? Are we a quilt or a multicultural quilt as a country, or are we something in between, or do we even shift throughout the time of our life? Are there times when we're one way or the other way? Are we one way at work and different when we're at home? I don't know about you, but when I was younger, it seemed much simpler, and then as you get older and start to reflect on it, it's anything but.
Yeah, for sure. And I think one more interesting thing that I found kind of throughout my research was that not only was this country of origin racially like charged issue between like just the bride and the husband, but also it depended on the husband's identity as well. So we had black soldiers trying to marry Japanese war brides. We had white soldiers. We also had Japanese Asian soldiers. And the policies differed.
Really?
Yeah.
And these are U.S. policies. How so?
So, again, it was very ambiguous and like really much like depended on the person who was in charge. But in general, U.S. Japanese, like American Japanese soldiers could marry local women. Like, that was allowed. There was this very derogatory quote about black soldiers marrying Japanese women because black soldiers at that time were deemed inferior in the racial hierarchy. So they were deemed not entitled or not instead, they were trying to protect this, like, racial purity.
Sure.
So white soldiers were not allowed to marry a Japanese woman, but black soldiers were deemed not respectable enough to have that quote-unquote protection.
So we're thinking of eugenics from white purity, I guess, mm-hmm. Stated really clearly, and I know you're choosing your words clearly, but okay to dilute or impact black culture, because in the thinking of the time, it's not going to be made any worse, mm-hmm. but not okay to impact white culture, because you will be bringing it down. So you ended up, I guess, it was okay for black men to marry Japanese women. It was deemed okay for a marriage between two Asian people, but not between a white man and an Asian woman. Does that break that down about right?
Yeah, and again, it depends on like who was in charge and who was kind of enforcing these laws. Because certainly there were like leaders at that time who were like, yeah, go ahead and just marry. Like, even though the technical law says it's not allowed, like, it was happening left and right.
Well, Loving versus Virginia is 1967, mm-hmm. When interracial marriage, the right to have an interracial marriage is upheld in 1967. And these instances are happening in the 40s. So it's you really picked an amazing topic. Now, you mentioned that you felt some resonance with this topic because of your own background. I don't know if you want to talk about that at all. You're welcome to.
Sure, yeah.
You're welcome to not, too.
No, I love talking about this. It's basically my entire personality. So I'm half Asian, half white as well. So I'm Wasian, we like to call ourselves. And I was also born in China, and I grew up in China, and I moved to the U.S. when I was 12. So
I didn't know that. I've known you for a while now, and I had no idea.
Yeah, so that's where I grew up. So I really resonated with the stories of Japanese war brides, because in my mind, like, take out the war part, and we're very much like the identity of my family very much mirrors that of Japanese war bride families. So that really struck a chord with me, and I remember just in the beginning of my research process, coming to the expert I talked about, like, her website, and seeing the photos of these Japanese war bride couples at their wedding photos. And I just remember being so struck by, like, how similar it was to, like, my parents' wedding photos. And that's kind of the moment where I was like, I know I'm going to write it on this topic. And I wanted to talk about the social impact that these women had and really focus on Japanese war brides and how not only did they create change, local change in their own communities just by being who they are and doing what they do, but also the policies. And actually, like, I make an argument that immigration policies, like, it took several steps to allow Japanese war brides to immigrate to the U.S. at one point. But then it kept on going from there. That was the gateway to allowing more immigrants into the United States. So, like, we're talking, like, centuries of discrimination, and like starting from the Chinese Exclusion Act and the Page Act, and the pillar, like, if we think about our immigration policies today, the pillar, one pillar is family reunification. And I argue that really started with World War II. And I think we as a country deemed that reuniting families and keeping people together and not driving them apart was more important than keeping out foreigners and people we deemed inferior. And I think that was really the first stepping stone to creating more change and allowing for this mosaic or quote, like, quilt, like you said, to be what represents our country today.
This, I hope it's not a tough question. Part of me is hopeful because I would think that younger people understand. And how old are you now?
I'm 18.
I'm sorry. So, by the way, this is Elaine Gombos. She's 18. She's about to graduate from Shadyside. And we're talking about an essay she wrote called From Enemies to Lovers, Japanese War Brides and Their Influence on Multiculturalism in the United States. We could be talking about this for a much longer time than we have left. But what I was about to ask you, I'd like to think that younger people who are exposed to more new ideas and who are exposed to people from other countries, as you become a voting age and are mm-hmm. able to change things, that this is going to get better over time in terms of acceptance of immigrants, family reunification above quotas, and recognizing the inherent dignity and value of all people. But I'm curious, is that a false perception? Meaning, do you have peers, don't have to list any names, who might feel very differently about this topic?
I think you can find people of any age who have all different sorts of opinions. I never got into like an argument about somebody else about it who like believed so passionately about keeping immigrants out. I've never encountered such a person at my age, but I'm sure there are people who think that way out there. And the important thing is to understand what the why they believe what they believe. And because there are certain issues, like I certainly see that side of the argument as well, whether we're talking about funding or social welfare, things like that. Like, there are more root causes behind those issues that are causing people to blame immigrants for taking that away. So what's important is that we address those root causes and go from there, because everybody has a reason to believe what they believe. And it's important to understand that. So I look forward to talking to people about this topic, because everybody has their own opinion and there are a million different varieties of opinions, and there's always a reason. And that's what is underlying in like all of our beliefs and all of our perspectives. So understanding that and acknowledging that we all arrived at our own perspectives through our own way and our own experiences, and our experiences should be all valued, then I think that opens up more space for conversation.
That's really well stated. So if an attitude is supported by a person's reality and their lived experience, that's okay by you. Not to say that you're here to bless everybody's point of view, but there's the basis for a discussion across what those opinions are based upon, as opposed to just having a belief that has no support behind it at all. It's really nice to talk to you about this, and we're just about out of time for this segment. Do you have anything else you wanted to mention about the paper you wrote or in general?
I think there was one fun fact that I remember one of the history teachers pointed out. He like came to me after reading my paper and said, my favorite part was when you mentioned that because in this one rural community, I think it might have been in Arkansas, I don't remember, soy sauce sales went up because a Japanese war bride had moved into that community and was teaching her friends and other neighbors how to cook Japanese food.
That's a nice combination of assimilation and also continuing one's heritage. That's
exactly.
That's something. So I'm thinking of all sorts of things now, like measuring soy, a heat map of soy sauce sales.
<That's> Over time.
Thank you so much for being here. And I'm glad you're here in Pittsburgh and you've been part of what we've been doing here too. And I hope to see you again.
Yeah, thank you, Larry, for having me.
You bet. That's Elaine Gombos, broadcasting live from historic Allegheny Square, along with Ricky Berger and Chad Green. And oh my gosh, we've got a whole bunch of folks here today. Brad Yoder is going to be around in just a second. This is Larry Berger, and this is the show that gets your weekend off to a good start, the Saturday Light Brigade. Saturday mornings at WRCT Pittsburgh, WIUPFM Indiana, WMCO New Concord, KRDP Apache Junction, Goldfield Ghost Town, Phoenix, WSAJ FM Grove City, WCUC FM Clarion, WNJR Washington, and slbradio.org/radio.
Love is but a song we sing, and fears the way we die. You can make the mountains ring, or make the angels cry. Though the bird is on the and you may not know why. Come on, people now, smile on each other, everybody get together, try to love one another right now. Some will come and some will go, and we shall surely pass. When the one who left us here returns for us at last, we are but a moment's sunlight fading in the grass. Come on, people now, smile on each other, everybody get together, try to love one another right now.